The committee will come to order. There is a quorum. Representative Doty, will you move the minutes?
Madam Chair, I would move approval of the minutes from the March 27th, 09 meeting, which I believe is the last one that we had.
All those say aye?
Aye.
No? Minutes are approved.
I want a discussion on that.
Yeah, it was too late. Okay. Representative Ward, do you want to come down? That would be wonderful. Representative Doty, would you move the bill?
Madam Chair, I would this time be very pleased to move House File 2538 to be recommended to pass and be placed on a consent calendar.
Representative Ward, revent the bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, I'm proud and pleased to be able to give a little bit of a history or a little bit of testimony on this bill. I'm very honored and proud to carry this bill. My grandfather and my dad were both past commanders of the Park American Legion Post number 106. I'm a member of the Nisswa Post number 627, Brainerd Post 225, and Ironton Post number 443 through the Sons of American Legion program. But more importantly, Madam Chair and committee members, this bill is to honor and celebrate the 90-plus years that the American Legion clubs have been helping and supporting our veterans and their families and our communities. Just as a quick highlight, Madam Chair, I just would like to talk about or highlight, you know, five different things. And I think you have this in your packet, members, about what the American Legion does. And just the five of the things that are on that list. The American Legion provides a college scholarship to children whose fathers and mothers have sacrificed their lives in a global war on terrorism. They have volunteered about 1 million hours every year at the 160 VA medical facilities nationwide. The American Legion members and their families donate about 100,000 pints of blood annually to the American Red Cross. American Legion members, through its Heroes to Hometown programs, work with communities to welcome back the returning veterans and help them make the transition to civilian life. And, Madam Chair, they also sponsor about 5,000 American Legion baseball teams that annually produces about 100,000 ball players. And many of us, including myself, enjoyed that summer program as an opportunity provided by the American Legion. You know, another purpose of this bill is to give us one more day to say those five very important words that we need to say to every veteran as we see them. And Representative Smith's son is coming. Ryan Smith, Representative Steve Smith's son, is coming home today. And those five important words are: "Thank you for your service. Thank you for your service." So this bill gives us another opportunity to celebrate and say those words to the veterans of our American Legion clubs. So on September 16th, exactly, Madam Chair, is when we're going to celebrate the American Legion clubs if this bill passes. And in conclusion, I would ask, Madam Chair, that the committee support House File 2531 to show the veterans how much we appreciate, respect, and value each and every one of them and their families for what they have done for our nation, our state, and our communities. And Madam Chair, I have one testifier if you would like to have him testify, or we can answer any questions that you'd like, Madam Chair.
Would you like to have your person there?
Mr. Ball?
State your...
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Roger Ball. I live in Oakdale, Minnesota. I currently serve as the Department Legislative Chairman for the State of Minnesota American Legion. Our department commander is touring the state with the National Executive Man from Minnesota with the National Commander of the American Legion this week, so he's not available for testimony. It is my pleasure to be here today to testify on this bill designating September 16th of each year as American Legion Day. The American Legion is the world's largest veterans service organization, and Minnesota is one of the 10 largest departments in the organization. Minnesota has nearly 100,000 wartime veterans and servicemen and women fill our ranks. We have another 40,000 that are SAL members and auxiliary members in the state of Minnesota. Together we contribute to the ideals of community, state, and nation. In the towns small and large, the American Legion is there to help veterans, their families, and the children and youth of the community. It's not just what we do, it's who we are. The Minnesota American Legion is both appreciative and grateful for this formal recognition and strongly support H.R. 2538. Our thanks to Representative Ward, you, Madam Chairman, and your committee members for the work you do for Minnesota veterans.
Heard all.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I'd just like to thank you for your service. And really, not any questions, well, just one. Representative Ward, can I be added to the bill? And my suggestion is that this go to the consent calendar.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair, yes, thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Cody?
Madam Chair, I have played ball and watched ball at Legion Fields. I have gone to dances and had a social beverage or two at many Legion clubs. And I was very moved and very pleased at the participation of our local Legion folks at the funeral of my father-in-law this past year. So it gives me a great pleasure to thank Representative Ward for carrying this bill. Thank you guys for your service. And with that, I renew my motion that House File 2538 be recommended to pass and be placed on the consent calendar.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The bill's passed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members.
Representative Severson? Representative Doty, would you move the bill?
Madam Chair, I move that House File 2809 be recommended to pass and to be referred to the Committee on Finance.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I will just give a kind of a quick overview of the bill itself. We passed this bill last year in the form of the Agriculture and Veterans Affair. I think it was about 133-1, if I remember the count correctly. Subsequent to that, there was a provision that was put into the Government Ops Operations Bill that repealed a provision in this particular bill, redesignated it, and preempted that provision. I had moved on the House floor at that time to have the Government Ops Bill re-referred back to the Conference Committee to have that provision taken out, and unfortunately did not prevail. What this bill does in its entirety is set it back to the provisions that were available in the first Agriculture and Veterans Bill. A veteran-owned small business, as defined in statute, basically has the ability to go up to a 6% targeted advantage for the bid for state contracts. Some of the issues that we ran into since we had passed this in MnDOT for its current status, which is service disabled or veteran-owned businesses that were established after September 11th, 2001. Basically, there were some glitches that had federal contracts involved, which did not allow us to allow our state veteran-owned businesses to participate in those because they weren't commensurate with that. We've been working on that issue. It's currently sitting in front of the congressional, the federal appropriations bill for transportation, and we're working on verbiage to solidify that so we do have veteran small-owned businesses that will be able to compete for state contracts even if there are federal dollars involved. It gets very convoluted. Let me just put it the short story on this is that this fixes it so that a veteran-owned small business now has the same advantages that the DBE or disadvantaged business enterprises would have. And I think as I gave the testimony on the House floor last year, there are currently about 121,000 women-owned businesses, about 24,000 minority-owned businesses, and about 483 veteran-owned businesses. Currently, of those DBE businesses, they use up about 2.5% of the 6% allotted. So there is not a big concern for competition that is going to take away from the DBE advantaged businesses. Members, this basically takes away the provision that is currently in law that was put in under the government operations bill. It says this is only for veteran-owned businesses that have been established since September 11, 2001. And part of that reason is the thought behind that was that we're giving an advantage or we're giving, you know, some help to those individual veterans who were meeting challenges that were after September 11th. But the real question goes to what about those that were before? Why are we disenfranchising the Vietnam veteran? Why are we disenfranchising the Gulf War, the Desert Storm veteran? Why are we disenfranchising the Korean War veteran? And I've received emails to that effect that here we go again, just another way that we can discriminate against our Vietnam veterans. So this is a provision that fixes what we did last year in the bill, and I would be open for questions, Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And Representative Severson, what's the answers to those questions, the individuals that oppose this bill? Why are we disenfranchising some of the other veterans? I mean, what's the logic? What's the argument?
Madam Chair and Representative Hamilton, you know, I talked to the author of that provision about this, and the feeling was that there was not enough money for it to go around, basically. I think the numbers speak for themselves. There's only 483 against 147,000 DBE targeted businesses. There's only 483 veteran-owned businesses registered in the state. And I'll go on to say that we do not certify. That has no fiscal note on it whatsoever. The federal government certifies, and then we use that database in order to ensure that they qualify for a veteran-owned business. But the argument was that it would take away from the DBEs. I find it hard to justify that when only 2.5% of those are out of the 6% is currently allotted, and the numbers are so small on in terms of veteran-owned businesses that I do not believe there's going to be a big impact on the DBE enterprises. I don't know if that answers your question, Representative Hamilton.
Yes, thank you.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Severson, I agree with you in theory and in approach here, but as Representative Hamilton may have also been alluding to, there are some questions, for example, about treating service-disabled veteran small business now on a par with all veteran small business or recently returned veteran small business with a veteran small business that's been established for some time. I'm sure there are reasons why you don't in this bill prioritize, say, either service-disabled veteran or recently returned veteran, but I was hoping you could explain to me so I could understand as well.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Morrow, I'm going to defer to Mr. Cleary on this, but I believe at the federal level, when there is a distinction made between service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses, I believe the preference goes to service-disabled. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow, Madam Chair, it's my understanding that at the federal level, they clearly distinguish between disabled veteran-owned businesses and those that are not disabled veteran-owned, because they target somewhat greater benefits toward disabled veteran-owned businesses. However, given the intent of this bill, we can strip that language completely out of this statute because we no longer would be distinguishing between the two. We would give them the same benefit at the state level. Now, if I could add one more thing regarding competition, it's my understanding that
The state currently has to, the legislature has directed that the state agencies currently take 25% of the value of all of their contracting for goods and services in a given year, each year, fully 25%, and they must parcel that small enough that small businesses can bid for it. And it's my understanding that small businesses currently, the preferred small businesses, those that currently get the preference, actually only take 2.5%. So there's roughly 10 times more of those contracts they could be bidding on, and that's where the small number of all veteran-owned businesses would be coming in and bidding on some of the remaining, would be bidding on that 25%. Perhaps moving that 2.5% to 3% or so. Does that make sense?
Madam Chair, Mr. Cleary, I think it makes sense. I might still have some thoughts, but I'm going to let the next person that Madam Chair would like to turn to go ahead.
Representative Doherty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Severson, I'm never sure where the boundaries are between committees, and I know that we're interested in the veterans part of this, and state government is going to have their view on this. But one of their objections to the original provisions, as I understand it, is that they thought the intent of this bill was to help in startup, and that's why the 9/11 and after provision. Is that, as the author of the bill, is that the intent? Is that a main intent? Would you just give a little more elaboration on that?
Madam Chair, and I believe that that is part of it. I also believe that if we're giving preference to any group, and this is where it becomes a legal issue, if we're giving preference to any group, we have to determine what is the entitlement for that particular group. Now, for DBE, or Disadvantaged Business Enterprises, that preference is kind of on the line of quotas, which the Supreme Court has ruled are unconstitutional, by the way. But the whole issue was, is there a disadvantaged business in which it would be to the interest of the people of America, to give some type of preference to get them up on the step, to allow them to get their foot in the door, so to speak. And part of that discussion that was had at the Supreme Court level several years ago was that that was kind of intended for a certain duration. In fact, Justice O'Connor said that her intent on voting for that provision when it was originally instated was that it would only be for a certain amount of time, say 40 years, reevaluate and then say, is this quota system making progress? And so one of the issues that we deal with at the state level here is, does the DBE actually benefit the state? Is it actually being effective in getting them involved in the business sector and getting them an appropriate amount of attention that they should be getting for minorities and women-owned businesses? So part of the incentive is, yeah, we need to get them into the marketplace, but is that effective? And then you go to the whole issue of all people are equal under the law, I believe. And so now you've carved out a special interest for a particular group. Now we're saying, well, veterans kind of fit in that category. Well, we can't say that veterans are generally disenfranchised, but what we can say is that we believe that the veterans have made a sacrifice to our nation that is it rises to the level of recognition, of a special type of treatment. And I guess the issue there is that these individuals have, whether they've served for 20 years, 30 years, or for 4 years, they have sacrificed for their nation, and I don't think that's at debate here. The point I'm getting to is, under a DBE provision or a targeted group, there has to be a justification, there has to be a study done on a recurring basis that says they continue to be justified in having this special consideration. At the legislature, we can say, you know what, there's a special group here that deserves our recognition, not because of their ethnicity or any other thing, but because of their performance of what they've done, that we can set this targeted, we can set this group aside and say, these people we honor and we think that they ought to receive recognition for that honor. And so that's what we've done with the veterans in this whole issue. And we've said veterans are legally entitled to be part of this 25% small business set aside, of which we're going to give them a 6% advantage in the bidding process. That's a very long, convoluted answer to your question. But again, It goes to, this was originally, the intent of this was not just for startup businesses, but for the ability for some of our veterans who wanted to get engaged in a particular industry, or they wanted to set up a business, and this gave them the recognition that that we honor your service in the past. So I guess the short answer is this was not intended just for startup. When the amendment came on for September 11, it was kind of carried over from another bill that was veterans preference, in which we were trying to revamp the whole veterans preference provision that said how we hire state employees at the state level was not working. And so I don't know if you remember particularly in that particular bill, we said that at least five veterans, if there's an open position, at least five veterans need to be interviewed for that position, because we, as we did the study in the state, we saw a declining number of veterans in state government. And we have not rectified that because of the way we hire at the state level. So the result of that was, we said, you know what, in order to get them in, we want to get those people who are transitioning off the battlefield, they're coming here, we want to make sure that those veterans that come in since September 11, 2001, have a priority in the hiring process. And that's kind of migrated over to this particular provision, which was not really the intent of it to start with, but it got mixed up between those two bills. Sorry for the long answer.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair, I will renew my motion that House File 2809 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance.
Almost is right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Bill is passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I apologize for getting long-winded there.
Representative Stirner. Representative Doty, would you move the bill?
Madam Chair, while they're making their way to the stand, I move that House File 2908 be recommended to pass and be placed on the consent calendar.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Doty and members of the committee. I have before you House File 2908 is a resolution requesting that as a state that we request the federal government be paid the Red Bulls, who have been waiting for their pay for about 3 years. It's about $200 a day for about 2,500 servicemen and women of the National Guard of the Red Bulls, which are headquarters in Rosemont, Minnesota. So I have Colonel Elnis with me to also fill in some of the details that you may have or questions you have regarding this resolution.
Any questions? Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you tell me the total dollars? You said 2,500 people, 200 a day, and then how many days? Just tell me the total dollars we're talking.
It's about $10 million.
$10
million? $10 million, yes.
Thank you. And what's the holdup anyway?
Well, the holdup has been some of the red tape and such and getting that process. And I think maybe Colonel Elnis has been tracking it quite a bit, and he could probably give more of the detail work on that, Representative Fowles.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Colonel Eric Almas, Department of Military Affairs. The delay is really started from the very beginning when the initial policy was issued in January of 2007. It did not take into account the nature of the reserve component that's on set amount number of is on orders for a set number of days. And what this policy basically did is give additional leave when you're on active duty for more than a year or on a deployment for more than a year time frame. So it basically took 8 months for them to come out with the policy saying that extend the orders for the reserve component. As a result, there's approximately, well, anywhere upwards to almost 23,000 soldiers nationwide who were demobilized during that 8-month time period that were not afforded the benefit. So Then the Department of Defense looked, and it took basically the next year to figure out that they didn't have the legal authority to make retroactive payments. So then they asked Congress to make a remedy. It was too late in that fiscal year for Congress to take action. So then Congress passed it this year as part of the National Defense Authorization Act, and that was made law in October 28th of 2009 for a one-year period for service members to apply. At that point, the services needed to issue implementation guidance, and in fact, that was just issued on Friday. So as we were addressing this for over a three-year period, there was no action, and thus the need for the resolution and so forth. And Madam Chair, with your permission, I'd like to discuss that. It's a little bit beyond that question, but address a letter that DOD pushed out on Friday. Thank you, Madam Chair. In your packets is a letter from the Department of the Army, the Office of Assistant Secretary, Manpower and Reserve Affairs, and that was just passed out here in the beginning, so it's probably separate from your main packet. But this is what we've been waiting for over 3 years, is implementation guidance on how to make sure that our service members will get the funds that they deserve. Now, the law passed said that the service secretaries could either provide a cash allotment of up to $200 a day for the service members or put them on orders. And the Department of the Army opted to go to $200 a day, and it's for that period from January through August of 2007, so anyone impacted by that. And they direct the National Guard and the Army Reserve to go out and build a list and submit a roster to the Department of the Army for payment of this benefit. Additionally, it asks for the services, or excuse me, National Guard Bureau to update that list monthly. So if they don't get it right the first time, they can send in updates here until the law expires in October. So it behooves then states to get in their list early for payment, and then they could add additional names to it at a future time if that should be the case, so it doesn't require absolute accuracy the first time through. Just one other thing on it too, once they get that list approved, it's sent to the DFAS, which is the Defense Fiscal Payroll Office, and once they get it, then payroll should be able to come up relatively quickly. So without knowing how quickly the states are going to submit, it's likely that some people, or I should say it's possible that some people could get checks before the end of March, which is in Department of Defense land pretty darn quick.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Sterner, Colonel, how many Minnesota Red Bulls does this affect?
It's about 2,500, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My follow-up question is maybe already been answered, and that is how widespread this is. You said about 21,000 people across the country?
Madam Chair, Representative, estimates at one time were as high as almost 23,000. And as they purify the numbers, it tends to go down a little bit, but that's the maximum amount that it would be.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Sterner, Colonel Allness. Is this money distributed from the Department of the Army directly to the Guardsmen, or will it go through an agency here in the state that would distribute the funds?
Well, with this particular resolution, it would be directly distributed from the Department of Defense to the men and women that serve.
If I have a follow-up question, Madam Chair. Representative Sterner, I think there was a very similar bill introduced by a member of our caucus as well, that this one may move through the committee process faster. Would you entertain the idea of allowing us to sign on to your bill as well?
Yes, I'd be honored for that to happen.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative
Kamara. Madam Chair, Representative Stern, I'll just remind you to look. I believe that there were 35 authors on this bill already, and so it might already be filled. I look to do the same thing.
Representative
Rostelsky. Thank you, Madam Chair. Colonel and Representative Sterner, if I understood things correctly, given the action from Washington at this point, really the only utility in this bill is more of a symbolic one rather than real, I mean, has some of the utility in the bill diminished since the federal action's taken place?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think that's probably an accurate characterization, is that it, obviously the service members appreciate, and it's actions like this that help get this resolved, because it's been a long, hard challenge to address these issues. We're not sure exactly how promptly DOD will move forward on this, so I would recommend it not be cast aside, but maybe laid aside at some point, and I defer to your judgment on where that would be, but maybe laid aside at some point, so if Department of Defense does not move on this, then it could rapidly be moved forward for a vote.
Any other question? Representative Doty, would you move the bill?
I renew my motion that House File 2908 be recommended to pass and be placed on the consent calendar.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Bill's passed. That's it.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Meeting adjourned.